welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We're going to be going back into the Enabling Acts. I didn't get a chance to go through all of those highlights for the Bill of Rights, or actually aligning the Bill of Rights to the 21st century, because that's what we need. We need to make sure that our rights are being protected, because we can't trust the courts. We can't trust government to say, yeah, don't worry, we got your back, because actually what they've got is a gun to our back. And if you look at what they're doing today, that gives you all the evidence that that's exactly what they're doing. This show is sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you are listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. Now, one of the things I need to tell you is you really need to start looking up Liberty Not Tyranny on Rumble. On a weekly basis, I sit down with the host of Liberty Not Tyranny, David Torres. And this week, we actually read through the one petition for his show, and we're going to kind of talk about that. We're going to read through the next petition as well. But what I want you to do is I want you to understand that, you know, he's actually, this is on the East Coast in Pennsylvania. And so, you know, this is a growing show. But more importantly, there are a lot of patriots who are of Hispanic descent. I'm telling you that it doesn't matter what your race, culture, or anything is. I believe every person believes and loves liberty. This is why we need to change our paradigm regarding our Constitution and these United States. We need to begin opening up the United States. Why is it that we're allowing them to come here without becoming citizens? But what would be better for them is in Nicaragua and in these states in Central America. Why is it that they're not applying to be a state, so that they, in Venezuela, so they can throw off their government and actually have guaranteed liberties? It's not, they're not going to become a state in a day. You know, all of these people that complain, oh, you know, next thing you know, we're going to lose our culture. Over time, and this is the most important thing that has to happen in the United States. One of the things that needs to happen is population centers really need to become their own piece. In other words, Seattle and Western Washington really needs to become their own piece of government, and we need to start splitting states. This way, as we create a new capital, as we create 200 states, well, now we have 200 states compared to how many nations are there in the world? Well, I'm going to tell you that as we incorporate more nations, California will become 5 states before all of these states become states. Does that make sense? In this way, the United States and representation of the original United States will be able to at least keep a keel in the water to ensuring our culture of liberty. It doesn't matter what the color of a person's skin is or you know, what they do for, you know, dinner, or what they eat, and their whatever you want to call it, their cultural lifestyle. The fact of the matter is, if they love liberty and they want to embrace liberty and and willing to die for it and become a state in the United States, we need to make room at our table for them. And I am telling you, over time, this will sweep the world, and all will be free and able to come unto Christ, where that is not the case in most of the world. So if you look at this theologically, this is a win-win. If you look at this in military standing, this is a win-win. This is an end to war, my friends. Christ gave us the solution. The divine hand of providence, that's how I should really keep it. Our creator and the divine hand of providence gave us the solution with this constitution to allow us to create an end to world war, to create an end to war itself, to create a civil dialogue throughout the world. Okay, so it doesn't mean that everybody's going to behave. We'll still have violent people, and we'll still have people that'll, you know, blow a gasket and go shooting up people. That'll still happen, but it will happen less and less and less. The problem is, and the reason why it's on an uptick here in America, is because we're allowing radical communist concepts and ideas for people to believe it's okay to compel people. If you're not gonna get on the program, we're gonna kill you. That's not okay. Anyway, as you know, we also talk about the free classes, and the constitutioneducation.us is where you can get free Constitution classes. Now, by the way, if you go to any of these URLs and you have a problem with the link, let me know so I can let, you know, Keith or the owners of the businesses, you know, hey, there's a problem with your website or what have you. Free Constitution classes at constitutioneducation.us, timbernation.com. If you're looking to get good hardwood furniture by a patriot, and this, we're talking hardwood, go look. Walnut, I don't think they do hickory, but they do walnut, maple, oak, you name it, they'll do it for you. But you'll end up paying the price for whatever custom wood you want, especially if it's really expensive. But, you know, there are super hardwoods like hickory that they prefer not to do. But they will do hickory, but you'll pay a lot more because they go through blades and such when they do hickory because it's that hard wood. Anyway, check them out if you're looking to get good quality furniture that will last years and years and years instead of this throwaway crap. It may cost more than your throwaway crap, but again, you won't replace it. Now, RadioDustCovers.com will allow you to keep your computers or things, your electronics, that when you turn them off and you're not going to use them for a while, keep the dust and everything else out of them. Check them out, RadioDustCovers.com. Now, one of the things that we also want to advise you of is you need to start reaching out to the local businesses, the mom and pop stores, and make sure that they're aware of the importance of getting involved in supporting constitutional candidates, not necessarily party candidates that want to drive agendas and are partisan, constitutional supporting candidates. And in so doing, they will probably start supporting whatever party gets on top of this mountain first. Anyway, we have our comment line, 425-270-5416. And what we want to do, because we never did get through all of that marketing, but we will once we're done with the enabling. I'll get back to you and go through some of these other points, because I think a lot of people are going, wow, one of the things that I didn't get through that we're doing a video for, and the video will probably be posted up on YouTube before I get to these things, and it will be aired first at Red Pill Expo, is how to make your elections local and get everybody that shouldn't have any say or money involved in your elections, how to do this in getting your states to actually make every election local. So that's one of the things, or one of the many things, that we need to do as a part of our, what we call, aligning the Bill of Rights and our constitutional rights and our inalienable rights to the 21st century. So where we left off with the Louisiana Enabling Acts, and what we've already proven with Vermont, Kentucky, and Tennessee, is that there has been really no change to these things. Now, Louisiana is like the first one where we really see that they've added sections and they've added a lot more, because this is the first that's come out of a territory that was purchased for the U.S. These other territories were either a part of the original plot and plan for the states and or for Britain that we basically kind of took. Okay, so where we left off was Section 3. And it be further enacted that the said state, together with the residue of that portion of country which was comprehended within the territory of Orleans, as constituted by the act entitled, quote, an act erecting Louisiana into two territories and providing for the temporary government thereof, shall be one district and to be called the Louisiana district, and there shall be established in the district a district court, to consist of one judge who shall reside therein and be called district judge, and shall be annually 4 stated sessions of the said court held at the city of Orleans, the first to commence on the third Monday of July next, and the 3 sessions progressively on the third Monday of every third calendar month thereafter, the said judge shall in all things have exercised the same jurisdiction and powers which, by the act, the title whereof is in the section recited, were given to the district judge the authority of Orleans, and he shall be allowed an annual compensation of $3,000. So this is the first time that they've got, wow, $3,000 to be paid quarterly at the Treasury of the United States. The said judge shall appoint a clerk of the said court who shall reside and keep records of the court in the city of Orleans, and shall receive for the services performed by him the same fees hereto allowed to the clerk of the Orleans territory. And it be further enacted that there shall be appointed in the said district a person learned in the law to act as attorney for the United States. And we'll leave it there. Yeah, so they're adding a lot more in setting up the laws and the federal law system so that, you know, everybody has their rights being protected. The interesting thing is, and we'll get into this when we come back from the break, is how many laws did they really have back then? They didn't have that many.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so really the only thing that I can see that would probably be the most important to the federal government is the enforcement of the tonnage and or taxes and or the collection of money that's coming in. And the reason why Orleans became a big seat was, and if you start looking at the district courts where they were set up, they happen to be set up in a what would be considered a big area for trade and or where, you know, goods are coming in. Now, Ohio, we already knew that Ohio was created this court, a district court. Well, that's because Ohio was the trading area for people to bring in furs and you know, deer and, you know, antlers, those byproducts out of the Wild West. And so as, you know, the trading and the selling of the pelts and furs were going overseas, there wasn't to be tonnage on that, but what was coming back in is something that they had to pay taxes on from foreign markets. And so, but the interesting thing is that it wasn't a port of entry, but maybe except for Canada. So anything that was coming into America via Canada, they would have had to have done. But they didn't go into the deep details like they did here in New Orleans, because obviously the federal government was really putting down this, you know, the intent here that they expected to have the law and order existing in the Louisiana Territory at the time. And if you remember correctly, there was a guy by the name of Aaron Burr who actually tried to incite treason and a revolution against the United States right here in what we call Louisiana Territory. And he was arrested and tried for treason later on. Now, Louisiana was becoming a state in 1812. So it was well after that point in time. That's one of the reasons why, maybe, that they said we have to have a federal court there, because I believe he was tried in Virginia, where a federal court was set up. Anywho, let's just kind of move on now and get back into Section 4, because that's where we're at. And it be further enacted, I'll just repeat this first sentence, and it be further enacted that there shall be appointed in the said district a person learned in the law to act as attorney for the United States, who shall, in addition to his stated fees, be paid $600 annually as a full compensation for all extra services. There shall also be appointed a marshal for the said district, who shall perform the same duties, but subject to the same regulation and penalties, and be entitled to the same fees with which marshals in other districts are entitled for similar services, and shall moreover be paid $200 annually as a compensation for all extra services. I think it's interesting how the marshal who risks his life to, you know, go bring people in is being paid $200, where the judge is being paid, what, $3,000? Yeah. Wow. And he's not risking his life. Maybe, why are they paying the judge so much? Maybe to ensure his loyalty to rule in favor of the federal government, maybe? You have to start wondering why, when you look at risks, why was the judge being paid much more? That much more. I can understand because he's educated, you know, just like the attorney, but the attorney's doing all the work. Now, the judge has to know the law, so maybe he should be paid a little bit more just for sitting there, and the attorney gets paid more, not more in salary, but is able to be paid more because he has services and so forth. But bottom line, you have to work harder to be paid more when you can just sit on your duff and make, you know, $3,000 a year back in 1812, that's a lot of money, my friends. It's a lot of money. And so we can kind of see, you know, when you start looking at how they started putting their emphasis on who they wanted to pay and who they thought was more important, they thought that the guy slinging the gun for the government was more expendable. You know, we can get anybody to sling a gun. You know what? After a few times, when people realize that, you know, that there's a lot of bad people in this area, and the marshals aren't surviving. I mean, their life expectancy is a week long, because there's been times in the West, in the settlement of the United States, where all of a sudden, you know, it wasn't paying to be that marshal or that sheriff or the law keeper in that area. And so, anyway, let's move on. Section 5, and be it further enacted that nothing in this act shall be construed to repeal the fourth section of an act entitled, quote, an act for laying and collecting duties on imports and tonnage within the territory ceded to the United States by the Treaty of the 30th of April, 1803, between the United States and the French Republic, and for other purposes. So, in other words, there were French operatives still operating in the West. And so, obviously, that's what they were talking about, that they wanted to make sure that they were collecting treaties on the French Republic. That they were, again, and that collection district shall be and remain as thereby established. Now, if you go and look at the castles in England, why did they have castles? For fighting war? No. The castles were basically created for sheriffs. Most all the castles throughout the United Kingdom were created for the sheriffs to keep the loot of the taxes that they were taking from the people. And then there would be a huge armed caravan that would come and pick that loot up and take it to the king. Now, the same thing, we're seeing very same thing here, that the whole intent of the law that the United States is creating, the intent of the law is to make money. And so, as we kind of look, and if you talk to anybody that understands the legal system today, the legal system is all about making money. It is not about justice. It is not about these principles that, you know, we adhere to. And it has really become a huge sham. Anyway, Section 6, the final section. And it be further enacted that this act shall commence and be in force from and after the 13th day of April 1812, approved April 8th, 1812. And then they go through all the signatures like they usually do. So, anywho, the next enabling act that we want to bring up will be, let me see, we already covered Ohio, we've covered Tennessee, Vermont, Louisiana, so the next one will be Indiana, and yeah, then we'll get into Missouri. So the Missouri Compromise will be the final one. So we might actually be able to end today or in our next segment, or I should say our next episode. Anyway, so this is an act to enable the people of the Indiana Territory to form a constitution and state government, and for the admission of such state into the Union on an equal footing with the original states, 1816. Statute 1, Chapter LV11, an act to enable the people of the Indiana Territory to form a constitution and state government, and for the admission of such state into the Union on an equal footing with the original states. Now, to be clear, the ones that I read, some of these enabling acts, were the end enabling acts, not the first, you know, this is what you have to do. So here's one that says that they now have to form a constitution and a state government, and they don't necessarily, well, we'll see what the details they get into. Be it enacted by the Senate and the House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled, that the inhabitants of the territory of Indiana be and there are hereby authorized to form themselves a constitution and state government and to assume such name as they shall deem proper, and the said state, when formed, shall be admitted into the Union upon the same footing with the original states in all respects whatever. Section 2, and it be further enacted, and oh, by the way, let's just make sure you understand that Indiana became a state in 1816. So Madison was still president, okay? So up to Madison, equal footing was still being maintained. States' sovereignty was not questioned. Nothing was really taken from them. And so Section 2, and it be further enacted that the said state shall consist of all the territory included within the following boundaries, to wit, bounded on the east by the meridian line, and so I'm not going to go through this. This is all the intersections, the geography of creating the boundary. And then they say, the western boundary of the state of Ohio, provided that the convention hereinafter provided for when formed shall ratify the boundaries aforesaid, otherwise they shall be and remain as now prescribed by the ordinance for the government of the territory northwest of the Ohio, provided also that the said state shall have concurrent jurisdiction on the River Wabash with the state to be formed west thereof. So every time they create a state, they want to make sure that they have a mutual sharing of the waters that are part of the boundary between the two states. Okay? Section 3. And it be further enacted that all male citizens of the United States who shall have arrived at the age of 21 years and reside within the said territory. Anyway, we're being interrupted by the promos. Anyway, so when we come back, we'll talk about, well, what are these 21-year-old males to do? And you're probably thinking voting and that type of stuff. You're probably right, but I'm not going to tell you until we read it. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL. Or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
And let's see what they were talking about. So here's something that's interesting. In every single one of these enabling acts, not one of them actually identified the importance of establishing a militia and gave them the direction of how to do so. Now, that may have been handled differently via the Department of Defense or something like that. And I don't know where that's at, but I'm telling you, folks, as we start looking at how these first initial states stood up and the guides that they gave us precisely how these states were to function and operate under the standing Constitution. And when you look at the amendments beyond the Bill of Rights, you will notice that not one of them has really changed the responsibilities of the state and or the relationship with the federal government, nor did it expand any powers of the federal government. And so if you really want to get to what is, you know, what is the real truth, what is ground zero of the government we're supposed to get to and restore, that's where we need to go. But I'm just, and there's the reason why we're showing you these enabling acts is we're showing you that up until while Madison was in the president, they were not changing the sovereignty of a state. It didn't occur until James Monroe. Now, anyway, I don't want to get into it, but okay, so I don't want to get into personal stuff and why I have such a personal affinity for all of these things. But anyway, Section 3, and it be further enacted, quote, that all, or not quote, that all male citizens of the United States who shall have arrived at the age of 21 and reside within the territory at least 1 year previous to the day and shall have paid a county or territorial tax, and all persons having in other respects the legal qualifications to vote for representatives in the General Assembly of the said territory, be and there are hereby authorized to choose representatives to form a convention who shall be apportioned amongst the several counties within the said territory according to the apportionment made by the legislature thereof at their last session, to wit, from the county of Wayne, 4 representatives. So here they are identifying the counties and how many representatives they get in creating their constitution and in creating their government. Now, if you've read my petition, because I haven't posted it, but if you've read my petition, I just got a gold nugget here. Because when they were establishing these states, the only people who had the authority to get engaged in voting and setting up the government at this point in time were males of 21 years of age. Now we've allowed U.S. citizens. They clearly stated U.S. citizens, not the inhabitants. The inhabitants could have easily been non-citizens, people that were just grifters or what have you. If you wanted to become a citizen, you had to naturalize. We actually, and if you go into the population of the United States and the citizenship and naturalization, you'll realize that way back then, it was okay to be an inhabitant here, you know, as a migrant or what have you, because at this point in time, we had not established immigration and or the controls and the limitations of immigration, where we only allow 1 million people by the law, by the standing immigration law. So here's the question I have. Now that and I'm going down a rat hole, but I want you to understand the magnitude of this. If we can only bring in 1 million and they're using refugees, which is unconstitutional and violating the law of the land, because the federal government does have the law, or I should say they do have the role, responsibility, and power of managing the naturalization of persons and also controlling the legal migration of people. Therefore, when they allow 1 million people and then they start injecting refugees and allow illegal invaders to come here, this only proves how the federal government is violating not only the essence of the law of immigration, but they are also violating the Constitution as far as how we classify invaders and protecting the states from an invasion, as well as importing people here with a power they don't possess. There is nowhere that we delegated the power for the federal government to allow political refugees to come into the United States. Show it to me. In the Constitution, show it to me. Because if it's not enumerated, they don't have the power. And if they said, oh, well, we created this treaty with the United Nations, then show it to me in the Constitution that we delegated to the federal government the power, the role, responsibility, and power to be able to join and involve us directly with another government and subjugate us. Where did we give them that power? They didn't get it. Now, they can create treaties for trade, and they can create treaties within those enumerated powers, but never did we give them the ability to throw us under the bus and join the UN. Never. This is why Republic Review becomes so critical in straightening the ship and undoing all of these things. Now, as we move forward, let's go on. From the county of Dearborn, 3 representatives. From the county of Switzerland, 1 representative. From the county of Jefferson, 3 representatives. From the county of Clark, 5 representatives. From the county of Harrison, 5 representatives. From the county of Washington, 5 representatives. From the county of Knox, 5 representatives. And so they're going through all these counties and on and on and on. And then Warwick, 1 representative, Perry, and the election of the representatives aforesaid shall be holden on the second Monday of May, 1816, throughout the several counties in the said territory, and shall be conducted in the same manner and under the same penalties as prescribed by the laws of the said territory regulating elections therein for the members of the House of Representatives. And it be further enacted that the members of this convention, thus duly elected, be and thereby hereby authorized to meet at the seat of government of the said territory on the second Monday of June next, which convention, when meet, shall first determine by a majority of the whole number under elected whether it be or be not expedient at the time to form a constitution and this and state government. So in other words, they didn't create a state legislature here by identifying these counties and this many representatives. What they did was basically let these people come to actually as a representative body to determine whether they form a constitution. And as they formed and as they move forward, when they form a constitution, you got to be clear, each county gets one vote. You may have multiple representations, but each county will get a vote on the constitution. The counties that have more representation will have more involvement, because as they break down the body to create the constitution, they will break it down. So in all honesty, there will be so many committees, and the counties that only have one or two, they will not be involved in creating the committee for this part of the constitution, that part of the constitution, that part of the constitution. But these parts of the constitution, almost everybody's participating in. And that's how the constitution gets formed. And then that's how they, when they take it to the body of the whole, that's how it gets passed. And so that is the process. It's not this, you know, everybody does everything. It takes a long time. Even our U.S. Constitution was never done that it was by a body, by a democracy of 50% carries the vote. It was 50% of the states that carried the vote. It was 50% of the counties that carried the vote to, yes, that's what they'll accept. So I want you to understand, get your head wrapped around republicanism, American republicanism, not democracy. Okay? Okay, so to form a constitution and state government for the people within the said territory, and if it be determined to be expedient, the convention shall be and hereby are authorized to form a constitution and state government, or if it be deemed more expedient, the said convention shall provide an ordinance for electing representatives to form a constitution or frame of government. See? So they're still going back to saying, okay, if this body won't do it, then you can create, you know, an ordinance for electing representatives to form a constitution, which said representatives shall be chosen in such manner and in such portion as meet at such time and place as shall be prescribed by the said ordinance, and shall then form for the people of said territory a constitution and said and state government, provided that the same, whenever formed, shall be republican and not repugnant to those articles of the ordinance of the 13th of July, 1787, which are declared to be irrevocable between the original states and the people and the states of the territory northwest of the River Ohio, excepting so much of said articles as relate to the boundaries of the state therein to be formed. And so from there, we will take a quick pause and we will be right back into going into section 5, 6 and on, because there's a bit more with this. And then we have the Missouri Compromise. So we may not make the Missouri Compromise into this episode. But hang on, we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I'm trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so as we start seeing how Congress and the United States government was allowing the states to create their own destiny, to basically determine how they were to be, we can clearly see that there was never any power to the federal government that they could dictate to a state how it is to, you know, whether it be a free state or a slave state. The compromise that was signed by James Monroe was not only repugnant, it was evil in nature, because it basically continued slavery decades longer than it should have been. Period. That simple. Section 5, and it be further enacted, that until the next general census shall be taken, the said state shall be entitled to one representative in the House of Representatives of the United States. So pretty much once they reached a certain level, like 50,000 people, I think it was, then they were entitled to one representative. And until the next census, which would have been in 1820, they would then be, you know, they would be entitled to what much, you know, however many more representatives based on the growth of the state. And 6, and it be further enacted that the following propositions be, and the same are hereby offered to the convention of the said territory of Indiana when formed for their three free acceptance or rejection, which, if accepted by the convention, shall be obligatory upon the United States. First, the section numbered 16 in every township, and when such section has been sold, granted, or disposed of, other lands equivalent thereto and most contiguous to the same shall be granted to the inhabitants of such township for the use of schools. So they're kind of helping them establish their infrastructure. That all salt springs within the said territory and the land reserved for the use of the same, together with such other lands as may, by the President of the United States, be deemed necessary and proper for working the said salt springs, not exceeding in the whole and quantity contained in 36 entire sections, shall be granted to the said state for the use of the people of the said state, the same to be used under such terms, conditions, and regulations as the legislature of the said state shall direct, provided that the said legislature shall never sell or lease the same for a longer period than 10 years at any time. In other words, now they are stipulating. So interesting. Here they are. And what year is this again? I go down to the very bottom. And this is all being stipulated in 1816, April 19th, 1816. And so this is when Madison was the president. And so they're starting to actually stipulate that a very specific salt springs within that said territory couldn't be sold. So in other words, they couldn't sell it, or they couldn't allow people to lease it for more than 10 years at a time. Not necessarily dictating, but it is kind of dictating what they can do, but I think what they were trying to do is trying to ensure that people couldn't create, because there must have been, and I don't know, I think the salt springs means that it was a important resource for the Republic as it was a part of the territory, that they wanted to make sure that Indiana and or the state itself started taking advantage of that resource, and how they started increasing the cost possibly to the other states. I don't know. I'm just pointing out that here, right here, they are stipulating that Indiana had some reservations. Now, remember that up above here, they're basically saying that it is for their free acceptance or rejection, which, if accepted by the convention, shall be obligatory upon the United States. So anyway, let's move into the next one. Third, that 5% of the net proceeds of the lands lying within the said territory, and which shall be sold by Congress from and after the first day of December next, after deducting all expenses incidents to the same, shall be reserved for making public roads and canals, of which 3/5 shall be applied to those objects within the said state under the direction of the legislature thereof, and 2/5 of the making of a road or roads leading to the said state under the direction of Congress. Fourth, that one entire township, which shall be designated by the President of the United States in addition to the one heretofore reserved for that purpose, shall be reserved for the use of a seminary of learning. What is a seminary of learning? Well, obviously, it is a religious collegiate education, okay? In other words, if you look at colleges in America, they were ran by churches. And at this point in time, states still had the power of establishing a church. I'm going to bet you that if you researched Indiana, it established, and all these other states, they all established a state church to actually run these education, because the churches ran education, welfare, and compassionate services, not the state itself, and vested in the legislature of the said state to be appropriated solely for the use of such seminary said by the state legislature. Interesting. Fifth, that 4 sections of land be and the same are hereby granted to the said state for the purpose of fixing their seat of government thereon, which 4 sections shall, under the direction of the legislature of said state, be located at the time in such township and range as the legislature aforesaid may select, on such lands as may hereafter be acquired by the United States from the Indian tribes within the said territory, provided that such locations shall be made prior to the public sales of the lands of the United States surrounding such location, and provided always that the 5 foregoing provisions herein offered on the conditions of the convention of the said state shall provide an ordinance irrevocable without the consent of the United States, that which and each tract of land sold by the United States from and after the first day of December shall be and remain exempt from any tax laid by order or under any authority of the state, whether whether for state, county, or township, or any other purpose, whatever, for the terms of 5 years from the date after the sale. Okay, so what they're doing is this: the federal government is making its money back after purchasing this land and after going down, you know, the path of, you know, making these things happen. I've talked about this. The federal government is only trying to compensate itself. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to make sure that the state doesn't come in and say, okay, right after people have purchased land, they have to pay taxes. So it makes the land a little bit more attractive. And this is what states do today. States will actually offer businesses, if they move and relocate, you get 10 years of no state tax. You just come here and employ our people. And that's what the Buck Knife Company did when it left San Diego, and I think it went to Wyoming or somewhere in the Midwest. Fact of the matter is that what the federal government was doing, and I believe, and I've said this before, that they do have the ability to basically receive the compensation for, you know, the money that they spent. But the problem was that when they started doing this, they started recognizing that, oh, you know what, maybe we can keep land. The other thing is that this is the time in Indiana, and at this point in time, when I believe the treaties were being done by the Senate with the Indian tribes. Later on, when they started moving west, the treaties were being done locally and they were being sent forward. And in other words, the treaties weren't necessarily being done by the Senate anymore. They were just accepting. They delegated that authority, but they couldn't at that point in time. The only way they could delegate that authority is by amending the Constitution to grant that. And I don't think the states would have approved giving the president or the executive department the full control over treaties. Because at that point in time, when they were doing that, the Senate was still being controlled by the states. So anyway, that's all speculative, right? Anyway, approved April 19th, 1816. All righty. So that kind of concludes the first six states that we've had that were enabled within the United States. Now, when we kind of look at the Missouri Compromise, so let me pull that one up. I wasn't expecting to necessarily be ending this so soon, but anyway, let me see what we've got for the Missouri Compromise. And so, well, what we're going to do, because I've got less than a minute, I just realized as I was looking for the document, I realized I've got less than a minute. We're going to pull up the Missouri Compromise. And what we're going to do is we're going to give you the historical view of the Missouri Compromise as well as going through it. I'll skip over the geographical boundaries because there's a lot of little rivers and little corners and so forth to Missouri. But what we believe is really important that you need to understand is that what the Missouri Compromise did was it absolutely and violently violated the Constitution. And it changed the course of America and slavery in America and actually continued it for several decades more, taking us into the 60s, 1860s, before we could find. And what we had to do was we had to shed blood to sanctify the purifying of the United States once again. Anyway, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org. www.reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.